Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. Debt-ridden Greece offered concessions Wednesday on its creditors' demands for more austerity measures. But Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras still urged his nation to vote no in a referendum Sunday on the lender's plan for new restrictions in exchange for more bailout loans. European leaders contend that a Greek vote against the lender's plan would amount to Athens withdrawing from the 19-nation euro currency bloc. But Mr. Tsipras said in a televised speech that a no vote is a decisive step for a better agreement, which we will aim to sign straight after the referendum. German Chancellor Angela Merkel rejected new negotiations, telling her country's parliament in Berlin, quote, "We will wait for the referendum. There can be no negotiations on a new aid program before the referendum." The Greek letter to creditors was shared with news outlets hours before a teleconference of Eurozone finance ministers on Athens' request for $32.4 billion in new funding. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif says his government has invited Yukiya Amano, head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, to Tehran to work with Iranian officials on how to proceed as Iran nuclear negotiators continue talks in Vienna. He made his comments Wednesday as he led an Iranian delegation that held another round of discussions with a U.S. team headed by Secretary of State John Kerry. In a statement, the IAEA said the talks were expected to focus on addressing ongoing cooperation between the nuclear watchdog and Iran. Iran and the five permanent members of the UN Security Council and Germany, so-called P5 plus one, are trying to come up with a plan that would restrict Iran's ability to make nuclear weapons. This is VOA News. U.S. President Barack Obama has announced plans for the United States and Cuba to reopen embassies in each other's capital, the latest in a series of steps to reestablish diplomatic relations that broke off more than 50 years ago. Speaking at the White House Wednesday, President Obama described the development as a historic step forward in efforts to normalize relations with the Cuban government and people. He said U.S. efforts to isolate Cuba, despite good intentions, often have the opposite effect, such as cementing the status quo and isolating the United States from its neighbors in the hemisphere.
The progress that we mark today is yet another demonstration that we don't have to be imprisoned by the past. When something isn't working, we can and will change.
The U.S. leaders said with the reopening of the embassy, the U.S. will be able to have more contact with the Cuban people, and diplomats will be able to engage more broadly with the Cuban government and civil society. He said, however, that the United States will continue to have serious differences with Cuba.
That will include America's enduring support for universal values like freedom of speech and assembly and the ability to access information. And we will not hesitate to speak out when we see actions that contradict those values.
In a letter to President Obama Wednesday, Cuba's President Raul Castro confirmed that Washington and Havana will reopen embassies as early as July 20th. Egypt's Islamic State affiliate claimed responsibility for a wave of attacks Wednesday in the Sinai Peninsula that security officials said killed at least 20 soldiers. The attacks against multiple military checkpoints included a suicide bombing near the town of Sheikh Zuwait. An Islamic State group statement said the militants hit 15 different checkpoints in the attack. The latest attacks come days after Egypt's top prosecutor, Hisham Barakat, was killed by a roadside bomb in Cairo. Indonesian authorities say the death toll from a military transport plane has spiked to 141 as rescuers continue searching the wreckage in a residential neighborhood on the island of Sumatra. The Hercules C-130 crashed into two houses and a hotel Tuesday, minutes after taking off from an airbase in Medan, Indonesia's third largest city. No survivors have been found. The pilot told the control tower before the crash that he needed to turn back because of engine trouble. Officials insist the 51-year-old four-engine turboprop aircraft was in good condition. China's parliament has adopted a sweeping new national security law that critics say will further enshrine and expand the country's suppression of political dissent. The largely ceremonial National People's Congress passed a bill Wednesday with 144 yes votes and one abstention, this according to the official Xinhua news agency. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Islamic militants attacked Egyptian army and police positions in the northern Sinai Wednesday, causing numerous casualties. Egyptian media report that the Islamic State group has claimed responsibility.
That's Edward Uranian reporting from Cairo. We'll have full details coming up. Also, Royal Air Force flights left England today to repatriate the bodies of an estimated 27 Britons who died in a shooting spree at a Tunisian beach resort. The UNHCR reports 137,000 people crossed the Mediterranean Sea into Europe during the first 6 months of the year. And health workers in Liberia are scrambling to contain the latest recurrence of the deadly Ebola virus. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Islamic militants attacked Egyptian army and police positions in the northern Sinai today, causing numerous casualties. Egyptian media report that the Islamic State group has claimed responsibility. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Amateur video showed an explosion followed by a gigantic fireball after militants attacked one of a number of army checkpoints near the North Sinai town of Sheikh Zawayid. Egyptian media report that dozens of soldiers were killed in a series of attacks on military positions in the northern Sinai. A military spokesman indicated that 70 Islamic militants attacked army vehicles with anti-aircraft missiles and that more than 20 people were killed. The militants reportedly took a number of soldiers prisoner. Prime Minister Ibrahim Mehlib declared that Egypt is now in a state of actual war. Israel reportedly closed a series of border crossings with Egypt, and state TV reported that the Egyptian military raised its state of alert to level C. Several media outlets reported that the militants had taken control of Sheikh Zawayid and surrounded the police compound. VOA could not independently confirm the report. Al Jazeera TV reported that the attack was the largest of its kind against the Egyptian military ever, and that Russian-made Hornet missiles were used in the strike. The TV's correspondent, who is in contact with Islamist activists, reported that hundreds of militants attacked a series of army targets. Apache helicopters and fighter jets launched counterstrikes against the militants amid reports that the attackers had mined several main highways and that ambulances were not able to evacuate some casualties. An army spokesman told journalists that the attacks were still taking place as of midday. Wednesday's attacks followed a series of car bomb blasts on Monday and Tuesday, one of which killed the country's top prosecutor, Hisham Barakat. Tuesday marked the second anniversary of the 2013 army ouster of Islamist President Mohamed Morsi. An Egyptian court recently confirmed death sentences against him and a number of top Muslim Brotherhood leaders. Analyst and retired Army General Ahmed Abdel Halim told Egyptian media that he thought the Muslim Brotherhood was involved in the recent attacks, along with outside supporters. Halim says that C4 plastic explosives were used in the recent attacks, which he says came from outside the country. He accuses the Muslim Brotherhood of funding terrorist activities inside the country with support from its allies. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi insisted Tuesday that the country would reinforce and execute its laws to make sure that justice is carried out quickly. It was not clear if he meant that death sentences against Muslim Brotherhood leaders would be carried out. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Royal Air Force flights left England today for Tunisia. They will repatriate the bodies of an estimated 27 Britons who died in a shooting spree at a beach resort. Other victims of the June 26 massacre have been identified as Irish, Belgian, German, Russian, and Portuguese nationals. Meanwhile, a Tunisian government spokesman says the gunman who was shot at the scene was trained by jihadists in neighboring Libya. Tunisian police killed 24-year-old Saeed Regzi at the scene of the resort hotel shooting. Tunisian investigators say Regzi and several men tied to the March 18th killing more than a dozen tourists at a Tunis Muslim museum received training from jihadist militias in Libya at the same time. Liberia confirmed two more cases of Ebola a few days after a young boy died from the virus. President Sirleaf says while this is very disturbing, she's confident the country has it under control. Mariama Diallo reports from Dakar.
Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf told a group of reporters on Wednesday that health officials are trying to get to the source of the newest Ebola cases in her country.
Very disturbing for us, but I'm very confident that our incident management system has the capability to contain this, to isolate this, and to keep it to right where it is so that it doesn't go any further.
Festus Starpar is the information officer for Margibi County, where the first victim died.
At the deceased resident, there were three individuals who were also sick, and the health team quickly came in to take their samples, and results from the laboratory have proven that two confirmed new Ebola cases, and one is still indeterminate.
He told VOA that massive work to minimize damage has been done since last Sunday.
The family members, as I speak to you, have a total of 100-plus contacts that have been established, 55 of whom are primary contacts. So as I speak, there is an active case search and finding contact tracing going on in the Unification Town and in the Wayne areas.
Other health officials say they can handle the situation. Deputy Health Minister Talbert Nuenswa.
We are not frustrated. We are only disappointed. Our anticipation was we would have maintained our clean sheet. In terms of capacity and energy, we have the energy, we have the capacity.
He also refuted claims that the first victim is from Guinea, a country still battling the outbreak.
The information whether or not the case came from Guinea, no. We don't have that information yet. What I do know is the facts are it's a 17-year-old maid live in the Needle Wine community near Smell Notice. A student, he was going to school, he's a Liberian, he's not a Guinean.
Ebola has killed more than 11,200 people. Close to 5,000 of them were Liberians. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, in Dakar.
A new UN Human Rights Commission report condemns extensive and far-reaching human rights abuses by Boko Haram insurgents in Nigeria and in three neighboring countries. UN Human Rights Chief Zayed Raad al-Hussein says Nigerian survivors of several years of violence reported the abduction of female residents. They also reported the mass killings of men and boys who were gunned down or hacked to death by Boko Haram. Zayed says women and girls have been sexually enslaved, raped, and forced into so-called marriages. Many survivors of these horrific experiences are now pregnant by the rapist. It is vital that the authorities ensure that every person who has been responsible for such crimes will be held to account in a court of law. Meanwhile, Nigerian military authorities in Lagos have announced the arrest of a businessman they claim participated in the abduction of more than 270 schoolgirls from a boarding school in Chibok last year. Spokesman Major General Chris Alukolade identifies Babiji Yaari as an active participant in the kidnappings and in the 2014 assassination of the emir of Gwoza. Alakolade says Yaari pretended to be a member of a youth vigilante group defending his community from Boko Haram attacks. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 16 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Islamic militants attack Egyptian army and police positions in the northern Sinai, causing numerous casualties. And Royal Air Force flights left England today to repatriate the bodies of an estimated 27 Britons who died in a shooting spree at a Tunisian beach resort. And for more news and updates, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. French President François Hollande visits Cameroon on Friday, his first visit to the country. His trip coincides with growing anti-France sentiment over economic ties and controversy over why many of the weapons seized from the Nigerian terrorist group Boko Haram are of French origin. Moki Edwin Kinziga has more from Yaoundé.
Cameroonians sing along the streets of the political capital Yaoundé that they are disgruntled with the French government. Professor Yimgang Moyo-Théophile, president of the Citizens Movement political party, says the protest ahead of French President François Hollande's visit is because the French government has maintained a strong grip on Cameroon's economy through colonial agreements that stop the Central African nation from seeking more profitable markets for its natural resources. He says 65% of Cameroon's financial reserves are kept in the French treasury following agreements signed in 1948 when Cameroon was still a French colony.
La France a toujours la mainmise sur la majorité.
He says bilateral agreements between France and Cameroon authorized mostly French enterprises to exploit most of Cameroon's forest and mining resources, even when Chinese companies propose more profitable deals. He says even the CFA franc currency used by Cameroon was pegged to the French franc in an agreement that should no longer exist, because France now uses the euro, yet France still controls Cameroon's currency. At the dawn of multi-party politics in Cameroon in 1990, Cameroon's main opposition party leader, John Frundi, called for a boycott of French goods and accused France of supporting Paul Biya to stay in power for his loyalty to the French. Professor Yimgang Moyo says since then, France reviewed its visa policies towards Cameroon. He says last year, close to 800,000 Cameroonians applied for visas to study or do business in France, but that just 7,000 Cameroonian students study in France. Professor Sinjun Pokam of the University of Yaoundé says Cameroonians are also angry over France's domineering role in Cameroon politics.
C'est anti-français, hein, état français. C'est pas le peuple de France, non.
He says many Cameroonians are developing hatred for the French government because since Cameroon's independence, France has always wanted to dominate Cameroon's politics by imposing people loyal to it at decision-making positions. In March this year, Chad's communication minister, Hassan Sila Ben Bakari, during a visit to Cameroon, said 40% of arms and other war material used by the terrorist group Boko Haram were of French origin. Sinjun Pokam says they expect France to explain to Cameroon, Chad, Nigeria, and Niger how the weapons get to the terrorists.
Ça veut dire que de toute façon, c'est la France qui a fourni ces armes. Que ces armes.
He says people are convinced that France is responsible for terrorism in Nigeria and Cameroon because France has never issued a rebuttal. They do not supply arms to Boko Haram, even though a majority of the weapons seized are of French origin. French Foreign Minister Laurent Fabius, in an interview with VOA, said he had been informed of the growing anti-French sentiments in Cameroon, but strongly denied his country supports Boko Haram, as Cameroonians claim.
I have been very surprised, when I was discussing with Madame Ambassador, when she told me that here, some people were saying or thinking that France was not against Boko Haram. It's a figment, but a horrible figment of their imagination. If one nation, one great nation throughout the world is fighting Boko Haram, it's France. And there is no doubt about it.
Cameroon's Minister of Communication, Issa Chiruma Bakari, says he blames especially the French media for giving an impression relations between Cameroon and France are tensed.
Vous avez des journalistes qui critiquent le gouvernement français. Non, RFI et France 24.
He says there are many journalists, some working with RFI and France 24, criticizing relations between France and Cameroon, but that he wants to categorically state that such journalists do not speak for the French government. François Hollande, who will be visiting Cameroon for the first time as president, will spend barely 4 hours in the Central African nation. Authorities in Cameroon say he will discuss the war against Boko Haram and social and economic ties with President Paul Biya. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
A record number of people fleeing war and persecution or in search of a better life have crossed the Mediterranean Sea into Europe in the first half of this year. The UN Refugee Agency says refugees comprise the vast majority of the 137,000 people making this dangerous journey. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UNHCR describes the mass sea crossing of the Mediterranean as a refugee crisis. Despite common perceptions, it says most of the people seeking to reach Europe's shores are not economic migrants, but people fleeing in fear of their lives. UNHCR spokesman William Spindler tells VOA, most of the people making the perilous journey in flimsy smugglers' boats come from countries such as Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, Eritrea, and Somalia.
The top five countries of origin of these people are all countries experiencing conflict or human rights violations. And all of the people who come from these countries have a very high recognition rate in as refugees in Europe. So European states themselves grant them refugee status to the vast majority of people who are crossing the Mediterranean. So we are looking into a refugee crisis as opposed to a migrant crisis.
Data show Mediterranean crossings by refugees and migrants between January and June increased by 83% to 137,000 compared to 75,000 in the same period last year. The UNHCR says it expects these numbers to soar in the second half of the year, traditionally the high season for migrant crossings. The number of deaths at sea also has increased dramatically. The report finds 1,850 people drowned or went missing at sea in the first 6 months of 2015. This is more than three times higher than the same period last year. Spindler notes the number of deaths at sea rose to record levels in April. He says more than 1,300 people were killed in a series of shipwrecks off Lampedusa and Sicily in Italy. He says this tragedy prompted European countries to reinforce their search and rescue missions. He says the number of deaths at sea dropped dramatically in May and June following this action.
What we would like to see now, it's the same kind of vision and leadership that Europe was showing in this robust search and rescue operation to be also applied to the reception of people once they land. We also expect Europe to do its part to help those who are seeking protection from war and persecution in its soil, because Europe has to shoulder its fair share in responding to this situation.
Most of the refugees and migrants crossing the Mediterranean land in small towns and villages in Italy and Greece. These places have limited capacity to deal with such large numbers of people. Conditions in the reception centers are described as appalling, and many of the arrivals eventually move north to other places in Europe. The UNHCR report shows the eastern Mediterranean route from Turkey into Greece now has surpassed the central Mediterranean route from North Africa to Italy as the main source of arrivals by ship. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thank you, Lisa. Also, the Italian Navy recovered the bodies of the first eight of an estimated 800 migrants who drowned when a smuggler's fishing trawler sank in the Mediterranean 3 months ago. Officials say a minesweeper and two other naval vessels are using remote-controlled submersible baskets to recover the drowning victims. Bodies have been found at a depth of 1,200 feet on the seafloor. Most are believed to be trapped within the hold of the sunken trawler. Italy's Red Cross is supervising refrigeration of the corpses for return to relatives. Migrant arrivals have almost doubled compared to last year. The UN Refugee Agency estimates more than 137,000 migrants have reached Europe so far in 2015. Since Italy received the first major flood of migrants, many are now arriving in other European countries. Hungary says it received about 67,000 migrants this year. They have joined Serbia and Austria and asking the EU help with the latest arrivals. Hungary announced construction of a 110-mile fence along their Serbian border to slow the migrant flow. Earlier this week, Hungarian police used tear gas to control rioting migrants in one camp. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. And for all the latest developments, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and on behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kelvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
This is a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
If you come into contact with the bodily fluids of a person infected with Ebola, you must wash with soap and water immediately. I'm Dr. Conde Greaves. The Ebola virus is only present in the blood, feces, vomit, breast milk, sweat, and semen of people who are seriously ill. The virus must get into your body to infect you. Do not touch your eyes, nose, or mouth, and cover any cuts on the skin. If you are caring for someone who has Ebola, do not handle bedding, towels, or clothes that may be soiled with bodily fluids without gloves. Avoid sexual activity with male survivors of Ebola. Men carry the virus in semen for up to 90 days. Ebola cannot survive for long outside the body. Sunlight, heat, Clorox, and alcohol will kill the virus. Know the facts about Ebola. Knowledge is life.
This was a public service announcement from VOA Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC. Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.